Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, September 5th, 2016. The South Sudan government bows to international pressure and accepts deployment of a regional protection force.
The transitional government of national unity gave its consent to the deployment as part of UNMISS of the regional protection force recently authorized by United Nations Security Council Resolution 2304.
And the U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations wants accountability for the horrible crimes committed in South Sudan.
We have come as the U.N. Security Council to try to determine how we can strengthen UNMISS, how we can push the government and other parties to implement the peace agreement, and how we can secure accountability.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Facing intense international pressure, President Salva Kiir has accepted to the deployment of 4,000 regional protection force to South Sudan as authorized by the United Nations Security Council. The resolution 2304 was issued last month following attacks on civilians and aid workers by men believed to be members of the South Sudan Army. Minister for Cabinet Affairs Martin Elia Lomuro read a joint communique on behalf of the government over the weekend, expressing readiness to respect the will of the international community.
The transitional government of national unity gave its consent to the deployment as part of UNMISS of the regional protection force recently authorized by United Nations Security Council Resolution 2304.
Back in July, President Salva Kiir told reporters his country will not accept the deployment of foreign troops to South Sudan. U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Samantha Power, says the 15-member Security Council came to Juba on Friday to pressure the Kiir administration for approval of the regional force. Power says if the government changes its mind, the U.N. will respond.
The resolution makes very clear that in the event we can't work through the modalities, which again, I believe that we can, in a spirit of partnership, that we will have to look as a council at other measures. The U.S. position is that we will support an arms embargo if we are not able to get to the deployment of the force in a manner that actually enhances the welfare of the South Sudanese people.
The regional bloc IGAD met in Addis Ababa last month to convince the Kiir administration to accept the UN Regional Protection Force as recommended by the IGAD heads of states in July when they met in the Rwandan capital, Kigali. Elia also says Juba is ready to work with the African Union proposal for the formation of a hybrid corps to try individuals from government and the SPLA-IO who committed atrocities during the two-year conflict in South Sudan.
The transitional government of national unity signals its readiness to implement Chapter 5 of the agreement on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan, including to work with the African Union in setting up the hybrid court for South Sudan as soon as the African Union provides proposals for its work as provided for in that agreement.
Addressing thousands of internal displaced persons over the weekend in Wau at a protection of civilian sites, Powers said the international community wants to see an end to the suffering of South Sudanese families targeted by a South Sudan army during ethnic violence committed in Wau in June.
We have come as the UN Security Council to try to determine how we can strengthen UNMISS, how we can push the government and other parties to implement the peace agreement, and how we can secure accountability for the horrible crimes that have been committed here and around the country.
The relationship between the United Nations mission in South Sudan and the government of South Sudan has been rough for some time. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makui accused the UN mission in South Sudan on several occasions of supporting rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. The UN mission denied Makui's accusations. Elia says his government is ready to normalize its rocky relationship with the UN mission in South Sudan.
The Transitional Government of National Unity commits to permit free movement to UNMISS in conformity with its mandate, including to protect civilians.
Several international aid agencies operating in South Sudan have complained about South Sudan's security operatives blocking aid workers to access areas under the control of SPLM-IO, where hundreds of thousands of families are facing acute food shortages. Ambassador Power told displaced families in Wau that the international community is aware of the various restrictions blocking aid workers from reaching people who are in desperate need of help.
It is true that we are not able to go to see your homes, many of which have been destroyed, but we believe you. You know best about what is happening to your families.
The 15-member Security Council is in Juba after the terrain complex attack in which international aid workers said they were raped by men in uniform. Tito Justin contributed to this report from Juba. The Associate Policy Director of the ENAF project says the deployment of the Regional Protection Force for South Sudan is needed in a country polarized by ethnic divisions. Brian Adeba says the force must develop good relations in South Sudan to avoid confrontation with various armed groups in future. Adeba says the presence of the force might diffuse tensions between forces loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar and the South Sudan Army.
The peace agreement is in tatters in almost every section of the country. So I hope that this new force will have the capacity to actually extend its mandate beyond Juba so that a holistic peace is realized in South Sudan.
Now, the two main protagonists, of obviously, as we know, was Riek Machar and President Salva Kiir. Riek Machar currently is out of the country. What can you tell us about the status of the peace agreement that was signed a couple of months ago?
Deal allows for two separate armies, and that's the problem, actually. And so it was signed or sealed on the basis that the two opposing factions would maintain the peace, and as we have seen, that has not happened. And of course, the other thing that the peace deal stipulates is a transitional period, whereby after 3 years, there will be elections to elect a new government that is elected by the people. But most importantly, really, when you look at the peace deal, it calls for fundamental and profound reforms in the institutions of governance in South Sudan. The peace agreement itself realizes and recognizes that the war that broke out in December 2013 was largely brought about by the absence of effective institutions of governance that would have mitigated the possibility of conflict. So the item in the peace deal that calls for a profound reform of the institutions of governance is really, really the most significant aspect of their peace agreement, in my opinion.
Right. Now, how hard was it for the government in Juba to agree to this force?
Well, at the beginning, it was very difficult. There was apprehension about the role of the force, the ethnic basis of that forms the support base of the president was not too pleased. So there were various interests that were suspecting that the role of this force was actually regime change, and so based on that, there was a very bellicose stance that was put forth by the government and its supporters. In the network of its supporters, which pronounced this resentment and opposition to the force, and even saying we're going to resist it, we're going to fight it. But that, of course, did not happen. We saw that the president himself finally came out in parliament and said any voices that are objecting to the presence of this force are doing so at their own, own inclination, and it's not the position of the government. And that was a significant shift from the earlier pronouncements that were coming out of the government and its supporters.
Now, there have been complaints among Riek Machar supporters that they have been targeted by the government. On many occasions, there have many reports that have come out that accuse the government of South Sudan for having committed human rights violations. Given the mandate of this force, do you see at some point a confrontation between these two forces?
Mm-hmm. First, let me just go back to your question, your first assertion of Riek Machar's people accusing the government of committing human rights abuses. I think when you look at this war, both parties are guilty of egregious human rights abuses across the country. So let me just put that on the record. None of them is free of guilt. Talking of potential negative reaction or confrontation with the force, this is a war zone, and it depends on how parties react or interact with the force. Obviously, if they interact in a manner that would elicit a decisive military force, I think we can say with absolute certainty that a confrontation will be likely. However, as I said, it really depends on how it interacts with the parties in the conflict. That is the government and the SPLM-IO.
That's Brian Adeba, Associate Policy Director for the Washington-based ENAF project. He was speaking with VOA's Jackson Vunganyi earlier today from Silver Spring, Maryland. South Sudanese displaced from their homes since the start of the conflict in 2013 welcomed the government's decision to accept the deployment of 4,000-strong regional protection force. Internal displaced persons sheltering in churches, schools, compound in Wau, and IDPs sheltering in a UN compound in Juba say the force should be deployed immediately so they can safely return to their homes. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Torit.
Welcome, regional forces!
Hundreds of IDPs chanted, "Welcome, welcome, regional protection forces," when members of the United Nations Security Council visited their camp in Juba on Saturday. The IDPs say they are glad the South Sudan government has now agreed to accept the deployment of regional peacekeeping troops under the United Nations mission in South Sudan. 25-year-old Marlina Nyachwet, who is a mother of three, has lived at the UN camp in Juba since December 2013. Nyachwet says she is tired of living in the camp and wants to return home. She says she hopes that when the protection force is deployed, IDPs like her will finally be able to return to their villages and live in dignity.
I feel very, very pain because I lost a lot of my relatives. I feel very angry. I'm not feeling well. To my two leaders, Salva Kiir and Riek Machar, I can tell them to be at one. People are suffering in South Sudan. Women are the ones who know the suffering of South Sudan. So I can say, give us freedom, people, let them live in the peace. And let all people stay in their natures.
Gatluak Jal Gatluak sought refuge at the United Nations Protection of Civilian Site in Juba during the fighting that broke out in Juba in July. Gatluak says IDPs like himself live under horrible conditions. He says he is anxious to see the protection force deployed.
If this move will actually happen, like I thought it would, then we the civilian will be secure. First, the additional troops should be very technical, not to wait for a month or even 2 weeks, if possible. They need to be here and rescue us. At least we can walk to the town freely without being raped if you're a woman, or being killers if you are a man.
IDPs in Wau also welcomed the government's decision to accept deployment of protection force. The IDPs say they are tired of sheltering at church and school compounds, but do not feel it is safe to return home. Hawa Ambar Julu is one of 15 IDPs sheltering in a church compound in Wau. He's speaking in Arabic. Ambar says she wants to see that security is restored and that protection forces should not just be deployed in Juba, but in Wau too.
If these people come to us, we need security, and if we have that, we will go back instead of staying here. We will go to our homes. Now children are staying here without education, which means they are going to be without future. Secondly, we have hunger, and food in the market is expensive.
A 45-year-old IDP in Wau, who does not want to be identified by name for fear of government reprisals, says the deployment of the regional forces should have happened a long time ago to prevent the rapes, lootings, and killings that occurred in July.
It is good that the Security Council team have come on the ground to see by themselves so that they can tell other people who want to hear the truth. There is an impact in their coming because we have lost a lot, which their coming earlier would have saved the situation in which we are in.
South Sudanese who fled to the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, during July's fighting also say they support the deployment of more peacekeeping troops. Bramatali Wani, a South Sudanese living in Nairobi, says the United Nations Security Council should make sure the troops are deployed quickly.
This current acceptance by the government, change of tone, change of attitude, should give serious lessons to the international community that they should not now leave a chance, because our behavior has proven that sometimes the government keeps changing directions and goalposts unpredictably. So the international community must now fully utilize this positive gesture.
Wani Michael, another South Sudanese refugee in Nairobi, is skeptical about a regional protection force ever setting foot in South Sudan. If they do, he advises them not to take sides and to focus only on protecting vulnerable civilians. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Tori.
Simon Wakiwudu in Nairobi and Tito Justin in Juba contributed to this report. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what do opposition parties have to say about the decision to deploy troops to South Sudan? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
should you take advice from someone just because they are an elder?
Not necessarily, but many people believe that we have to do that. But it is not. I think that 90% we can take it, but not every time. Because sometimes they are wrong. Many times they are right, but sometimes they are wrong.
You can take advice from elder you want to care about the ideas, which kind of ideas they give me. So you have to care about and choose the best one.
Yeah, one side I can accept it, but also I try to think, because so many old people are not educated. She can be wrong and also she can be right. So you have to check a good answer.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Opposition political parties in South Sudan have welcomed the government's decision to allow the deployment of a regional protection force in the country. The leader of the minority in the National Assembly, Anyoti Adigo, says the Kiir administration has finally understood the need for the deployment of regional troops after repeatedly rejecting the idea. Michael Atit has this report for VOA from Juba.
Anyoti Adigo says the government's consent is welcome relief to tens of thousands of South Sudanese living in fear.
The majority of people in South Sudan wanted this force to come because they have seen that the government has failed to protect them miserably. That is why most of them ran into the POC camps. Most of them went outside the country. So the announcement that there are forces coming here was a blessing to them, that they are coming to rescue them. And it is good that the Security Council members have come to clarify this point, that they are not an invading force.
Onyoti says once the regional protection force is deployed, the government should cooperate with it so that the force can carry out its mandate. He says the government must restore the trust that was lost with its citizens.
If the people have no trust in their government, and the government is shouting that let these people come out from the POC camps, how do they come out when you did not give good gestures so that they believe in you?
The leader of the United Democratic Party also welcomed the move by the government to accept the troop deployment. Stewart Soroba says once security is provided, people can once again cultivate their crops and feed themselves.
People should have embarked on agriculture. You have seen people have decided to have on agriculture, but things are not going the way people want it. So I expect something, a change may happen. I am not God. I'm not anybody. But a person who comes to help is giving a lending hand to stop a war in your country. He's most welcome.
Peter Mayan, chairman of the People's Liberal Party, says The presence of the Regional Protection Force will also encourage various armed opposition groups to lay down their arms.
The government achieved a lot. One of it, it helped the government to stabilize the security, of which the government couldn't do themselves. And the foreign troops will rebuild the confidence of the various armed oppositions to leave the armed oppositions and come back in the government.
Mayan says the government should now focus on opening its doors to all armed opposition and start the process of unifying the army.
My hope and belief is that majority of them will bow down. What the government need now is to create enough space. That means they have to give amnesty to the various armed oppositions in the various parts of the country, to allow them to come in so that they can start investing or they can start working on a democratic process.
The SPLM in opposition also welcomed the government's change of heart. SPLM IO spokesman Mabior Garang issued a statement praising the government on its decision, calling it an important step in resolving contradictions that have emerged in the implementation of the agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan. Mabior wants the government and UNMISS to involve the SPLM-IO in any decisions for the deployment of the protection force. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Tito Justin contributed to this report from Juba. While they are not openly rejecting the deployment of the regional troop deployment, some civil society activists in South Sudan say the protection force should build the capacity of the South Sudanese army to protect civilians. Activists say protection of civilians should be the work of the national army, not the international forces. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
A few civil society groups organized demonstrations against the UN Security Council's resolution to extend and strengthen the army's mandate. Ajang Akwach, head of the Civil Society Alliance, calls on the UN Security Council to assist South Sudan armies because he says UN troops in the country may not be enough to protect the civilians.
Protection force of 4,000 may not be enough even to protect the entire country, leave alone the capital of South Sudan, Juba. I understand the government said clearly that they will cooperate and work with the enemies. So for us as civil society, we are not an island. It is true. I have been appealing also the government to cooperate with the international community.
Mading Ngor, a civil society activist who met with the United Nations Security Council delegation in the country this past week, says the best thing that could happen would be to empower the South Sudan Army to do their work. He says democracy has to be given a chance because it is the will of the people.
There have been many challenges. There are clear failures. We understand that the international community has a reason to have a say in our affairs. But we have to tell them that the correct approach, the sustainable thing to do, is to support the capacity of South Sudanese to be able to take charge of the affairs. If you struggle for 50 years, it takes long for you to be able to build that confidence to be able to do the right thing.
Ajang says, as head of the Civil Society Alliance in the country, he thinks protection of civilians is a national duty of the government, not enemies or the international community.
It is high time now to call for reconciliation and healing. And I would like to take this opportunity to call upon those who have taken arms against the state to come home, join the implementation of peace agreement. And also, I urge the government to negotiate and dialogue with those who actually took arms against the state. I also call upon the citizens of South Sudan that this is the time that you need to unite and work together for nation building.
The Security Council delegation touring South Sudan over the weekend has threatened to impose an arms embargo if the government declines to accept the UN mission's new mandate with the additional peacekeepers in the country. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
The diaspora in the United Kingdom, United States, and Canada are welcoming the government's acceptance to allow an additional 4,000 troops to the country. Starting off the conversation is Lomoro Moses from the mid-eastern state of Iowa, who says increasing the United Nations troop size will help protect lives of the thousands of innocent civilians.
I mean, I think at this point that is the only feasible way that we can be able to stop that the violence that is going on and the suffering that the innocent civilians are going through.
My name is Esteria Nako Peter Bilal. I'm a South Sudanese. I'm calling from Bridgeport, Connecticut. Yes, I welcome the movement of the government to welcome the UN personnel to South Sudan because of the terrible killing of the South Sudanese army against its own civilians.
Adieu Majok, and I'm calling from the United Kingdom. I had a different reaction before because now the government has come out and said they didn't accept the troops, but they gave consent. So I'm a bit confused about that. And I feel like the government should just be honest with its position on the matter because, again, it's them who, you know, run South Sudan. But they should also be honest with the citizens and also with the UN Security Council, because now it's just a back and forth and we're not very clear on their position on Resolution 2304. And I feel like that the UN Security Council should also listen to the government, because the UN peacekeepers have done quite a bit of failures before, even the protection sites harboring fighters and weapons and such things. So it was very important for the UNSC to visit. And if they could work out an agreement that would benefit both sides and also the civilians that deserve protection, then that would have been the best thing.
My name is Kuragaran. I'm calling from Canada, from Calgary, Alberta, in Canada. I'm welcoming the additional 4,000 troops because the role they have to play in South Sudan has been very well explained. So I have no fears in welcoming them. It's a good idea because we've seen South Sudanese, and now many, many South Sudanese are living in protection sites because they are afraid. And the government has also shown, and the rebels have shown, that they have no capacity to protect civilians. Any long-term solution is not up to foreigners to bring. It's up to us. What we just need is a conducive atmosphere for us to do our own things. What the international community gives us is just the atmosphere for us to do our own things. So that's what they need to understand. Yes, it's not the long-term solution, but it should come from us. The long-term solution should come from us. The idea that the UN is against us should actually be thought very carefully. The UN is not against the people of South Sudan. They have shown by taking the members of the Security Council to Juba. That is something that we need to think about. It's a great honor for the people of South Sudan.
Some voices of South Sudanese living in the UK, Canada, and the United States talking about what they think of South Sudan government's decision to accept deployment of regional force. That's the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with some traditional Bakas song from Maridi State. We have been listening to some traditional Baka group from my village in Maridi State. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.